Big show for you here today. Conference championship round is in the books, and Andy Behrens joins me to break it all down. We talk Bills, Chiefs. The Chiefs and their just overall buttoned-up nature is too much for the Buffalo Bills to survive. What can the Bills do in the offseason to move forward? Same thing. Eagles, way too talented for the Washington Commanders, who had a great run this year. What can they do to beef up things around a transformational quarterback? And finally, we do a little Super Bowl therapy. You all out there might not have wanted this game in the Super Bowl. It might have not been my number one ranked matchup to get in the Super Bowl, but it's the game we got. How can we enjoy it? What can we look forward to? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, January 27th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. What a great Sunday of football we have to discuss here. Two great championship games. Well, one of them was a great game. An absolute banger in the AFC championship game. Yeah. A lot of things to discuss, a lot of things to break down. And joining me to do all of that is my good pal, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, listen, if you don't see the NFL through a conspiratorial lens, that was a freaking awesome night of football. Oh. That was just an absolutely great game. Banger of a game. Yet another one from those two teams. Loved it. I believe the last time we spoke, I listed the upcoming Super Bowl as my least favorite potential Super Bowl matchup, and I just want to repudiate that comment right now. I want to disavow it. I'm really excited for these two teams. Everybody involved was going to make for a great Super Bowl, and obviously this is an absolute classic. We have the Chiefs chasing history. We have the Eagles, who often look like they are the best team in the league. Let's go. This one's going to be great.
Okay, two things on what you just said. Number one, on the officiating stuff, if you come away from last night's game talking about the officiating or complaining about the officiating, or you're one of these handful of absolute losers that have just made your entire Twitter personality highlighting every mistake about the ref, the refereeing, the officiating, whatever, I mean, you just get out. Like, you're just not the type of football fan I want to be engaging with. I mean, still listen to the podcast, please, but don't expect to find that happening here in the next 60 minutes, Andy and I going through the ref files or whatever. Secondly, you mentioned the Super Bowl matchup. I also ranked that thing fourth. I'm willing to give you a pass because, Andy, that was pre-Ben Johnson Bears head coach Andy Behrens. Like, you're a different man now. You're a rosier person. Your whole world is turned upside down. So like that, yeah, I'm actually willing to let you disavow what you said on the previous episode and any other things you want to take back. We'll get to that later because you are a new man. But really, I mean, I also ranked it fourth. I think most of America would have ranked it fourth. And being fourth of four possible great games is whatever, you know, is whatever. But it's also worth noting that we're going to touch on the Super Bowl matchup in our third segment here in a very brief way. We're going to have obviously 2 weeks to break that damn game down from every different angle. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. But we're going to kind of exercise the demons with a little Super Bowl therapy in the third segment here and kind of touch on some of the things you're discussing here. But before we get to that, we are going to break down these two games here. Let's start with the AFC Championship game and those Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs 32, Bills 29. Andy, the Chiefs do it again, man. And I stepped in to co-host Football 301 alongside Nate last night. And the thing that I just talked about this Chiefs performance with is that they're just so buttoned up. That sounds very boring, but I think it really exemplifies this performance for Kansas City and really the way that this team has played all season long for the most part.
Yeah, well, it takes a mix of boring and thrilling to get to a Super Bowl, right? Like you have to be a team that plays relatively mistake-free, which of course they do, and you have to be a team that is capable of absolutely thrilling moments, which of course they are. This is the first time all season, I believe, that they scored more than 30 points in a game. They picked a great moment to do it, right? But this is what great teams do. There's an agreed upon time when we have to be playing our best football, and the Chiefs are doing that, right? So Patrick Mahomes is outstanding. He averages 9.4 yards per pass attempt in this one. There's so many things that you have to be concerned about when you're facing the Chiefs, of course. If you know, but man, you got to stop Patrick Mahomes from rushing for 40 plus yards. You know that that's going to be like secret, hidden, really, really annoying, just absolute, you know, crushing, gutting yardage that is going to be gained against you over the course of a game. And you got to find a way to control it. He rushes for 2 scores. I mean, it was just a phenomenal game from him. That team as a whole, just so calm in the biggest moments. You can't say enough about that. It's also like this cast of characters and who they went to in some of the biggest moments was just absolutely wild. Like Samaje Perine doesn't touch the ball until he ices away the game late in the fourth quarter, right? Like this whole offensive cast of characters is a 2019 fantasy roster, and they are just making it work. It's Hollywood Brown. It's Kareem Hunt, who again, you know, led the backfield. Wasn't great, but wasn't bad. Got all the yards that were available to him, I thought. It's Juju Smith-Schuster making plays. It feels like a small miracle that the Chiefs are here. And the other thing that I will say on the Chiefs side is that, I mean, you really saw the importance of home field, right? You saw the importance of getting the 15 wins and getting home field in this one, because it was just a razor thin margin, and being in their building in friendly circumstances certainly helped.
Yeah, when you're going through that list of the cast of characters here on offense, I don't think you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins, who has 11 right. receiving yards over the course of the postseason here. Just 2 targets, again, had all of those 11 yards in this game. And it's just like, yeah, DeAndre Hopkins, one of the best receivers of this era, and he's going to a Super Bowl after mostly bouncing around on losing teams. I mean, he went to the playoffs a few times with Houston, went to the playoffs once with Arizona. So I shouldn't say like losing teams, but this is his first Super Bowl. This is the first time he's sniffed this game, and he's like kind of just a piece within the orbit of the offense, which is the way most things are here in Kansas City. Everything is like it's Andy Reid, it's Patrick Mahomes. That's sort of the epicenter of this team. But there, it's hard to obviously it's hard to parse out some of the stuff here with some of these players. But it's like the cast of characters continues to grow for Kansas City, really. And I mean, but at the center of it is Mahomes, it is Andy Reid, and I think we also have to put Steve Spagnuolo in that category now too, because he's just been so critical to the success of this team in this particular matchup too. You felt that consistently. You obviously felt it with the fourth down blitz that he called that really just broke the Bills' protection rules, and they didn't really have, like, you know, we'll talk about that when we talk about the Bills, but that was a great play call in a critical moment, and Spags has just been doing that since he's been the defensive coordinator of this team. And he's probably never not going to be the defensive coordinator of this team, Andy, because if Tom Brady, who's basically running the entire Raiders operation right now, if that guy who got Spags in the biggest stage, right, when Spags was the Giants defensive coordinator, if he's not going to hire Steve Spagnuolo to be a head coach, nobody's going to do it, because he's just like he's not the type of coach that people are looking for right now at his age, and obviously being a D coordinator and somebody who's already had the gig before. Those guys usually just don't get second chances. He'll be the D coordinator there as long as he wants to be, as long as Andy Reid wants him to be, which why would he not want him to be? So that's another thing that it's boring stuff like this, but this is what the Chiefs are. It's continuity, right? Like, and that's what this team just rolls back mostly the same core, but has these different little pieces within the orbit of everything, and that's why they are what they are.
Yeah, another thing I should have mentioned at the top, and this is just, you know, this is part of what the Chiefs do. It is a triumph of coaching and player development. Xavier Worthy's playing really well right now.
Yeah,
Xavier Worthy has 11 receptions in a couple of postseason games in his rookie year, and I don't think any other Chiefs wide receiver has more than 3. Like, Xavier Worthy is the top dog all of a sudden in this receiving core. And, you know, you think of the names that they've actually brought back, that, you know, they add DeAndre Hopkins in season. They finally get Hollywood Brown back. And this is kind of the Xavier Worthy show. And he was great. We saw him win in a contested situation. Got the catch in a contested situation, a simultaneous possession deal. And, you know, he's just been sensational on some of the shorter stuff. Like, he is, they're building this passing game around Xavier Worthy and to, like, in a secondary manner, Travis Kelce, and it is working. And that is no small achievement, because it has not always been an easy watch with Xavier Worthy this year.
Oh, no. I mean, I I think he played outright poorly to start the year and was sort of, you know, I think I've said this before. He was like the meme of the negative version of what you'd think about Xavier Worthy would be coming into the NFL because of, you know, he weighs 165 pounds or whatever. Couldn't beat man coverage, didn't win contested. He went down so easily in the open field. But credit to this organization, which, like, obviously you have a plan when you take a guy like this. I always come back to taking Rashee Rice last year. And, you know, I asked him this at the Super Bowl, like, when was the plan, like, sort of in place that you were going to move from an outside perimeter receiver, like mostly running goes and curls, to being like a big slot receiver for this team? And he's like, oh, that was expressed as soon as I was drafted, you know, that I was going to move into that position, which I thought was so, I mean, just it's so inspired by Andy Reid and that coaching staff to do that. And I think with Worthy, it took a little bit more time to kind of find the right buttons to push with him, but they've absolutely found it now. I mean, you go and look at here, he's obviously the leading receiver here, 85 yards. He has minus 5.6 air yards per target in this game here. And obviously that's with him getting that long deep reception. So they have found ways, and it's some of it's a little gadgety, some of it's a little bit Mickey Mouse stuff, but they're finding ways to use and express his speed so much better than they were at the beginning of the year. I do think having Hopkins and having Hollywood Brown back, even if those guys aren't, you know, big time target earners or anything like that, just having those guys out there to do the quote real receiver stuff, you're moving Xavier Worthy around while you're getting ways where he's in, you know, one-on-one coverage with Damar Hamlin, you know, and some of the slow safeties that the Bills employ back there. Yeah, that's what you want to do with a guy like Worthy. So they found the right ways to use him, which gives me confidence for what he could do in the postseason, although it's going to be a much different secondary matchup there in the Super Bowl, but obviously even into next year as well.
Yeah, he's actually probably one of the guys, and granted, the Chiefs receiving core looks a little bit different next season, but he's probably one of these guys that has gained the most in terms of fantasy appeal, fantasy value throughout the postseason, because he has just absolutely stepped up as the key member of that team's receiving core, like by orders of magnitude at this point. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like against Philly, because as you mentioned, that is a very different matchup, and that is a very good secondary. Although I mean, Xavier Worthy presents you with a speed problem that is unsolvable for most defenses. Also, a little thing that he's picked up at some point, he did it a few times against the Bills. He now does the Tyreek Hill thing, where quite often the first step he takes after a catch is backward toward his quarterback, just to like create a little space maybe and give his speed an edge. And it's always been super effective for Tyreek. It's not a thing that you would ever coach anybody to do unless they have like 4.1 or 4.2 speed. But you know, it's a sign that Worthy is getting a little bit more comfortable with the pace of the game and knowing what he can get away with and what he can't.
That was some of the issues with the after catch stuff early. And is like, he's never going to be a tackle breaker, but once he's got this spacing down and sort of the angles of everything, you see him on these like mesh concepts that, I mean, that was the Rashee Rice play. Now you're taking, it's a very different way of being an after catch threat there, because Rice is more of the tackle breaker. He's more of that hammerhead from the slot. Whereas Worthy, yeah, he's just running away from guys. I mean, poor Kair Elam, who had to play because Christian Benford goes down like right away. And I really was stunned in just how much that Tony Romo specifically and the CBS broadcast in general were going ham on Kair Elam, just like keep picking on Elam or whatever, which Nate made the point that is like, that's so former quarterback of Tony Romo, because like when a quarterback sees the backup corner come in the game, like, all right, we're testing that guy. And Elam didn't do anything to discourage the testing. But I mean, at times there were like, Elam wasn't even in the same zip code as Xavier Worthy on some of those crossing routes.
Yeah, totally, totally unfair. But I'm glad you pointed out the way the broadcast treated it, because I really started to feel bad for the guy, right? Like it was getting so highlighted by the broadcast team and preemptively before anything had even happened. I'm sure that's right. I'm sure Tice is right. It's the quarterback instinct to see any sort of backup corner coming into the game, replacing somebody who was a totally competent player. That was a weak point, and they certainly kept hitting on it.
No, yeah, they did. And the Chiefs kept hitting on it too. So it's, it is what it is. And that's the type of stuff that, again, like it seems so boring with Kansas City, but it is continuity. It is the fact that they were the healthier team. And they're clutch. Like defining what clutch is difficult, right? I found this stat from at Josh DeBow, Associated Press writer. Patrick Mahomes has trailed in the fourth quarter of 9 playoff games. He's come back to win 6 and forced overtime in 2 others before losing. He has a 132.2 passer rating with 5 touchdowns and 1 touchdown run when down 1-8 points in the fourth quarter overtime of playoff games, leading scores on 13 of 14 drives. Like it's hard to define like what clutch is until you see it. And the Chiefs are just, they're clutch. Like they feel very inevitable. I'm like the 100th person to say that, but they felt that way when Buffalo did not. And do you have anything else on Kansas City, like before we move to Buffalo? Because I mean, they're probably the more interesting thread to pull on in this game.
I mean, I just think it's a wonderful point. They're at their most comfortable when the magnitude of the moment is greatest, right? And that is, if you made me define clutch, that's probably the way I would define it in the old, you know, Joe Montana example of, there's John Candy. Wow, like you're just completely unruffled and unbothered in the biggest moments of your career. And that is the kind of player that Patrick Mahomes has been since arriving in Kansas City, basically. And now he's just, it's almost like they're not comfortable early in the regular season. Like they're not disinterested, I would say, but they're, you know, they build toward these moments and they are never more at home than they are in the fourth quarter of huge games that they either trail or are tied and can be lost. Like they're never more comfortable than they are in those instances.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know if it's disinterested or anything like that, but, you know, they're winning the games in September and October. That's the thing, is we're always like, well, can they play this way and get by in January? And it's like, well, they're not going to play that way. Whatever they're doing in September and October, they're not going to be doing here come January. Yeah. That's always been the case with Kansas City. It remains the case, certainly, with this version of the Chiefs. We'll have a lot of time to talk about, you know, some of these offensive players and things like that in this game. And obviously, once we move towards the Super Bowl, we'll focus more on the matchups, things like that. But also, like, what's the future for some of these players here? Because I do think that's going to be an interesting question with this particular cast of characters for the Kansas City Chiefs on offense. But let's flip it over to the Bills, who... God, I mean, if you're Josh Allen, if you're a Bills fan, you just got to be feeling sick today, because I do think that these two teams, Andy, were very level this year. And
about as even as it gets, right?
Yes, about as even as it's ever been for these two teams. And I think maybe that it ever will be. I don't know. That's like foolish to say. Who knows? But it was very close in this game, I think, between these two teams. And the reality is, if you're going to go into Arrowhead, even if it's close like that, and you're going to be the team that edges out Kansas City in that matchup, you have to play an A-plus game. And that was not an A-plus game by Buffalo. It wasn't a bad effort or anything, but they kind of piddled around in the early portion of the game. Allen felt a little jittery. The passing game was a little hit or miss. And once they kind of drilled down into what they're really good at, the run game, things like that, you know, that's when the offense started to hum. But then of course you mess things up late, and you like all the sneaks that were unsuccessful. It's probably like the worst sneak conversion game in NFL history. I actually think that might be right, but I don't have the stats offhand. You mess around with that stuff. You have the fourth down play. Like, it's not an A-plus game. You lose to the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the way it works.
Yeah. They put the ball at risk or put it on the ground so many times, yet never turned it over. And at some point that had me thinking, oh man, maybe it is their day, because those like first couple drives there could have been some interceptions there. And of course, again, they fumbled it multiple times and didn't result in any giveaways.
Sneak where he jumped over and it like kind of let it go, but got it back. It's like, oh, that felt a little fateful.
Oh my gosh, the strip sack where he recovers it like with one hand, which incredible play, like ridiculous athletic play. But you know, they kept getting the, you know, they kept being on the right side of stuff like that. They scored two of their touchdowns on fourth down, so it's not like, you know, this was some completely gutless game by the coaching staff. They got a brilliant game out of James Cook, who was, you know, I thought you really saw like some sneaky speed from James Cook. You'd think he was going to go out of bounds, and then there were six more yards there, right? Like he was just absolutely great. They only gave up two sacks. They held Travis Kelce to two catches, and still it wasn't enough. So you can understand. I mean, Josh Allen was really tough to watch in the post-game press conference, obviously deflated. That was a tough scene. Incredibly likable player, likable team. They are so close. But also we just keep saying that, and they keep losing a different version of this game to the same team every year.
And it's weird because it just feels, yeah, it feels like they're so close. And in a weird way, it just feels like it's one of those almost like, you know, you have like a relationship with somebody and the timing is just never right. You feel like, oh man, we could be, I mean, not now, Andy, you know, maybe in your distant past. Same for me too. Happily married man. You know, it's like, oh, you know, we could have been something, but we just never got the timing right. That's sort of how Buffalo feels in a weird way to me on offense, because when I'm watching this game yesterday, especially late in the game, when Steve Spagnuolo is pitching all of this, like cover one, cover zero, I keep thinking to myself, man, it would be really nice if they had a Stephon Diggs like dude.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they made a mistake to trade Diggs or whatever. I think that relationship had run its course, and all of that stuff. And, you know, but when you're throwing screens to Amari Cooper, the guy that's supposed to be your outside perimeter player but hasn't really established that or anything, instead of just like, hey, I have confidence that I've got man beaters on the outside and like I can go to work, you know, as the Bills offense, it feels like, yeah, what you need is like a Stephon Diggs type of number one alpha receiver. But the problem is that when they had Stephon Diggs and that connection was peaking in the playoffs, or not as much in the playoffs, but that connection was peaking, I think it pittered in the playoffs a little bit, because they didn't have all of these other guys, right? They didn't have like a Khalil Shakir type chain moving role player. They didn't have like a Mac Hollins dirty work guy. You know, they didn't have some of these role players that's nice for Buffalo now. And so in a weird way, that's what I mean by like the missed opportunity, like the misconnection relationship type thing. It's just the timing isn't right there. And I don't know how they find that number one wide receiver this offseason. And I'm not even saying it's their number one need going into the offseason, but I do think in that game, and it would have showed up well.
Yeah, no, it is a need. I don't know if it's their number one need, but you know, you mentioned like his third and 10, right? The screen to Amari Cooper. Like it doesn't feel like a great play call, but also like, who are our other options?
What are you
gonna do? The downfield options here? They're not, you know, Keon Coleman isn't making noise yet. You probably got to keep attacking this position in the draft. There's really only one big prize among the wide receivers in this free agent class. Just really, really tough. You mentioned Mac Hollins, and before he becomes like just a total footnote in the postseason, what a run from him. What a game by Mac Hollins.
Yeah.
Huge downfield touchdown against the best corner on the Chiefs. Just a wild postseason for a guy who's like, this is his fifth team in 7 years. Most of America knows him. If they know him at all, they know him for not wearing shoes. he just played an absolutely huge game. And that's another one of those things. Like, again, you didn't have any turnovers, even though you put the ball at risk. You score a couple of fourth down touchdowns. You get this crazy game from Mac Hollins. And to not win a game against this rival under those circumstances has just got to be so gutting.
Yeah, got to be gutting. Yeah, you're right. Shout out to Mac Hollins, who was like the least discussed Buffalo pass catcher in the offseason and ended up coming up the biggest in the biggest moments here. And that, again, that's, again, all credit to Mac Hollins. And I deserve to, you know, take some crap for saying like, oh, he's like a special teamer and things like that when he has played well for this team. But again, that can't be your like most productive outside wide receiver. You've got to have more dangerous options there. So to me, it's just like there are little moments for Buffalo. Obviously, the Kincaid. I don't even know how hard I want to be on Dalton Kincaid for not catching that fourth down pass. Like it was a miracle.
Thank you.
It was a miracle that Allen even delivered that thing. I also don't really want to spend too much time second guessing, like, oh, should he have thrown to Khalil Shakir? At first blush, it's like, no, maybe you do, like, maybe that's the first read. But like, if that's not the number one read in the concept, like, Allen can't contort his body to just throw to a guy that's, you're probably then going to loft it and he's going to get tackled because he's 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So like, on that one particular play, I almost don't want to be too hard on these guys or anything, because it was just a great defensive play call. But again, you just felt the lack of, like, Klushke, a great player, but you felt the lack of, like, downfield difference makers for this Buffalo team.
Yeah, on that specific play, what you saw was a great defense that was dictating terms, right? And the entire internet seemed to announce at once that Dalton Kincaid had dropped that ball, which seems a little extreme to me, because he's downfield and has to come back for it. He's fully laid out, and yeah, I mean, it's a catchable ball, and it hits both of his arms, but he is completely horizontal when he's attempting to catch it. If he brings it in, it's a great catch. So I don't know that I want to, like, make him the absolute villain there and call it a drop. I'd be shocked if the NFL actually classifies it as a drop. It was a degree of difficulty catch, in my opinion. And to your point about the Shakir even being an option on that play, and it looked like maybe that was the design, and it was pretty clever, and it was open, but it was open for a fraction of a second. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Josh Allen is getting flushed to his right, and it's not a throw you can make. Josh Allen, of course, very comfortable going to his right. And Josh Allen, like, on the run to his right in chaos, might be the most dangerous player in the league. So whatever, it didn't happen. It was there for maybe 0.2 seconds, and then it wasn't. And also, Shakir is going to be well behind the line of scrimmage. And if he doesn't get it, and there are, I'm not going to say that it's, like, well covered, but there are potential tacklers that are available to bring him down. If they bring him down short of the line to gain, all we're talking about is how you can't throw it short of the sticks on fourth down, right? Like, it just sets up a different conversation. I don't know. I mean, that was a defense dictating terms, and you know that Spags is going to bring pressure, and a lot of it got through, and it forced Josh Allen into an uncomfortable situation, and he still almost made a play, but it would have really required a heroic effort by Dalton Kincaid. And I thought a lot of, you know, the fact that everybody was just jumping on Dalton Kincaid in that moment had to do with the fact that everybody watching that game, no matter who you're rooting for, unless you're rooting for Kansas City, if you're an impartial observer, you just wanted the game to be extended. You just wanted that drive totally to be extended. And we all felt that way, but I don't know that I would turn him into any kind of villain.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that I think if the, like, fantasy drafters treated the Buffalo Bills pass catching group in a way that just rarely ever happens in the NFL, and I was actually going back and forth about this kind of with some people in my Discord today, because it's just, they want me to chart tight ends and I will never do it. We were talking about, like, I mean, it's very rare that a tight end is going to be so good that he's going to be the number one read in a concept. You know, like, the gap between the top tight end and your top wide receivers has to be ginormous for that guy to be the number one read in a concept. That's just not how most offenses are structured. Most offenses want to flow through the wide receivers. Well, that's just, again, the way you're going to run the progressions. It's not normally going to be tight end as number one read. I think fantasy drafters treated it that as if it was going to be that way. And that's why the vitriol has been so hard on Dalton Kincaid, because of where he was, simply because of where he was drafted in fantasy, which is, that was a notion I didn't really buy into. Even if I had Kincaid ranked kind of near where he was drafting, I thought that him becoming this, like, 120 target player was pretty unlikely, because I didn't know if he was so good that he was just going to leave all these wide receivers in the dust. And he hasn't really been that level of player yet. I mean, maybe he becomes that player, I don't know, but for now, like, I think that's why people have slammed him so hard in this moment, is because he has been, he's been, like, a good, I don't think he's been bad at all in Buffalo, but I just think he's been, maybe the expectations were maybe a little bit unfair to him as a player.
Yeah, I feel like if you want a fantasy takeaway from the 2024 Buffalo Bills, maybe it's that, you know, I think many of us looked at that receiving core in the preseason last summer and said, oh, there's going to be a star here somewhere. Let's just figure out who it is. And under normal circumstances, if there's going to be a star in a receiving room, we know who that guy is going to be, right? It's not necessarily a case where a quarterback is just going to manufacture a superstar receiver out of nothing at all. Not that, you know, they aren't all working with something, but, you know, we should recognize a star's qualities when we see it before it happens. And maybe when we try to talk ourselves into some idea that, oh, is it going to be Keon Coleman who sees 140 targets? Is it going to be Dalton Kincaid who sees 140? Like, if we don't have a good idea of who the superstar is going into a season, it's because there isn't one there.
Yeah, Khalil Shakir leads the team in the regular season, 97 targets, 821 yards, which... yeah, that's what it felt like. He is a good player, but he's not that superstar mm-hmm. guy either. So I think Buffalo pulled off the, we don't have a number one wide receiver, we're kind of pass catcher by committee. I think they probably pulled it off better than any other team that tried it this year.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of like Green Bay. I'm thinking of like Chicago. I'm thinking of like Indianapolis. But I also think they have the best quarterback of that bunch, right? You know, I mean, that's why I think they're able to pull that off, which they pull it off to the point that they get to the AFC Championship game, but they lose in the AFC Championship game, which is unfortunate. Any other final parting thoughts on Buffalo, like where they go from here, what comes next, what you're kind of watching in the offseason, especially from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing to watch in the offseason, obviously, is what happens to the receiving corps. And if they do add somebody who has a little bit of that like superstar potential, and we can talk ourselves into that, that's a huge aspect. The other thing, I mean, it's hard, but you got to keep running it back because you are right there. But Buffalo's just got to give themselves home field in the postseason and keep recreating the same scenario. I mean, it's hard because you're gutted. You just lost. You just lost a game in which a lot of things actually went your way. I don't know, take a day and complain about the refs if you need to, if you're inside the Buffalo bubble, but don't let that spill out to the rest of the world. I don't need to hear it. Take a couple days and complain about all that stuff. And then, you know, that team needs to keep running it back because they have a right answer at quarterback. They have a team that is right there. And it, again, if you put them, you know, on a neutral site or just anywhere other than Arrowhead, that game can flip. That game can really flip. So you gotta, like, it's hard to say that we don't need to blow it up, but man, there's nothing to blow up here. Like, you're like, maybe you're one player away in the receiving room from winning a damn Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, their free agent list too. It's Amari Cooper. It's Damar Hamlin. It's Rasul Douglas. You know, it's Mac Hollins. It's Reggie Gilliam. It's some of these like role players. They've played well for this team, but they have a lot of continuity on the offensive line. They have Josh Allen. I think they're well coached on both sides of the ball. I just, you know, they're like, Von Miller is probably going to be gone, and Von Miller didn't really work out for them. But like, that's the type of player they need. They need like a difference making edge rusher on that side of the ball, and they need more of like a dictator from a coverage perspective on the outside of the perimeter. Which, it's easier said than done. But I'm with you. You just gotta, you know, put on your big boy pants and give it another shot. And that's pretty much what it's going to be every year. And, you know, unfortunately, like I think I said this a year or two ago, like, Mahomes is just going to ruin a lot of these guys' career. It is what it is, but you gotta keep just keep chopping wood. And I have plenty of faith in this Buffalo operation that they will do that. And Josh Allen will do that, in the years to come. We'll see if they finally break through. It's not this year. Then maybe it's next year. All right, let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk through the NFC Championship game right after this. All right, we're back. Let's talk through the NFC Championship game, Andy. Eagles 55, Commanders 23. And I mean, the score gap definitely underscored the talent gap between these two teams. All credit to Washington and the season that they had, the run that they just went on. We'll talk about them here in a second. But let's focus on Philadelphia, the winning team here. And holy shit, Andy Behrens, when that team is rolling, it's tough not to get rolled right over by them.
We talked about it with Kansas City a little bit. I mean, this is a great team that's playing its best football at the biggest moment. And that describes the two teams that are actually going to be meeting in the Super Bowl. Like, Philadelphia's played a ton of games this year where you're like, yeah, they feel in control of this thing, and yet it's a one-score game, right? They've played so many games where it feels like they dominate, and yet they're not really pulling away from an opponent. They pulled the F away from Washington in this game. This is like a full expression of the potential of this offense. The two big players where you worried, oh gosh, is Jalen Hurts okay in this one? Is he too banged up? Is Quinyon Mitchell too banged up? Well, they answered those questions with flying colors. No, they are not too banged up. They were both great. Hurts was great. He had a touchdown run that was negated by a penalty called back. And then he had, you know, later had a legitimate touchdown run and not just a pushing touchdown run, where you could just see that he was fully mobile and they got him right within a week. So like no worries there about injury. Saquon was Saquon. Huge game from AJ Brown. Just a physically dominating game from AJ Brown. Dallas Goedert was great. We're running a couple of jet sweeps with Dallas Goedert. Like just what a fun game plan. Everything clicking for Philadelphia in that one. And it was one of those, it's one of the only games that I can recall where Philadelphia just absolutely ran away from an opponent. And it was, that thing was really good. Everything looked great. And they suddenly very much, of course, looked like a team that, all season I've been thinking, oh man, whoever comes out of the AFC, that's probably my favorite, whether it's the Chiefs or the Bills or the Ravens or whatever. And all of a sudden Philadelphia looks like the best team in football. That was actually incredible.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Because this Philadelphia team, they've played really well on the offensive line all year. And I mean, shout out to Landon Dickerson, who clearly playing hurt in this game and also playing a position he hasn't played at in years, because he was a center at Alabama and then is kicked out to guard for Philadelphia and is such a good guard that he just got a contract extension heading into this year. And because Cam Jurgens was banged up, you know, he's got to go out there and play center. And then Dickerson leaves the game and Jurgens is just back out there at not 100%. So even where they had an injury issue, they're so well built on that offensive line that they can survive that. But they played really well on the offensive line all year. Their defense has been great all season. And Saquon has just been, I mean, like a complete freak show in this ecosystem. Yeah. And drink, I said ecosystem. They've been so good on those three areas. And it's just, it's felt like something isn't right because the passing game hasn't like been clicking on all cylinders. But all we need is like what I would call this a B plus effort from the passing game, which is, you know, you get a B plus effort. That's good. B pluses are good. Mm-hmm. I'm not a stickler for grades here. B plus good. But at the same time, like, you know, there's some missed opportunities in the passing game, whatever. You know, Jalen Hurts a couple of times has like a weird response to pressure, but that's just going to be who he is. All of a sudden you get a B plus effort from this passing game. It's like, oh yeah, this is the best team in the league. This is the most talented team in the league. And I mean, it's just so well expressed by the fact, Andy, that all we're talking about is Saquon, Saquon, Saquon. And then, oh, by the way, yeah, they have a top five receiver in AJ Brown, who's done nothing in the postseason statistically. And when they want to call on him, he can get 62 yards against man coverage and just, you know, easily running by Mikey Sanders still for a couple of big plays there, getting in Marshawn Lattimore's head. That's just how talented this team is.
I thought the opening drives of the game really encapsulated both teams almost perfectly, right? Washington chews up like 7 minutes of clock. They convert multiple fourth downs. Why chase big plays when you can just execute 18 very small plays? It took forever, 18 play drive. And then, Washington looking good. And then Philadelphia comes out. First play from scrimmage is Saquon Barkley going 60 yards. It's just Philadelphia has been so about the big play all year. And you can't stop it because, honestly, it's one of the things that I probably underrated the most. Biggest whiff by me in fantasy in 2024 was not appreciating what it would look like when Saquon Barkley just got a free run at the line of scrimmage every damn time. Because, we already knew that's what DeAndre Swift was benefiting from, right? They had a pretty good run game because nobody ever gets hit behind the line of scrimmage for Philadelphia. You give Saquon freaking Barkley those opportunities and you get the season that he just had. And for him to arrive at this moment, at fully healthy, that's just great to see because it's been so long since he's had one of those years. So it's really fun that Saquon's going to be in the Super Bowl, honestly. And that's just kind of a dumb fanboy thing to say, but it really, this is a great stage for him. And I'm so excited about that matchup, but it was just an almost perfect game for Philadelphia, even though, even though Washington did successfully move the ball, just great plays by defenders to knock the ball loose multiple times, right? They force three fumbles, recover them all. They get De'Ami Brown, they get Eckler, they get, you know, I mean, that was a really impressive defensive effort from Philadelphia against a young quarterback who was, again, playing spectacularly well. You couldn't really have expected a game that was much better from Jaden Daniels, and still they were overwhelmed.
Yeah, overwhelmed is the right way to put it. And it did feel that way right from the first play that Philadelphia had, because, yeah, it's like Washington took almost like half the first quarter on their drive, and it did feel like, oh, yeah, this game is going to go really quick, because Washington can go on these like long, meticulous drives where they're so efficient in the short passing game. We probably do need to have a conversation about their run game, which for the most part has really fallen off in the back half of the season. I highlighted that with Dalton on the preview show. That's something that I think they're going to have to look at in the offseason, because I think this offense just runs better when they have a better designed running back run game. And they were not that type of team late in the season. And really for most of the playoffs, they haven't been that type of team. But they're able to go on these like long, meticulous drives. They go for it on fourth down a ton. They're very aggressive in that way. But they take all that time off. They kick a field goal. And then you think like, oh, yeah, well, Eagles, they're a run first team. They're probably going to go on another one of these long drives. This first quarter is going to be over in a flash. Oh, wait, yeah, they are a run-first team that is one of the most explosive rushing teams we've ever seen. And, yeah. I mean, just the story of this season to me is, and it's fitting that Barkley is in the Super Bowl, and it's so awesome just to see him in this moment after, you know, kind of suffering with the Giants for a long time, and now he's going to be in the biggest stage. It is really cool. But the story of the season to me is these – like special running back talents like a Barkley, like a Derrick Henry. I mean, I think Jahmyr Gibbs fits into this category too. Taking these already great rushing ecosystems and truly weaponizing, I said ecosystem again, truly weaponizing it. And that was really expressed in this game, especially for Philadelphia, because I mean, the fact that, yes, Barkley is obviously fantastic. Will Shipley has like a 57-yard run late in this game in the exact fashion that I imagined Saquon Barkley would be able to thump this Washington run defense that has given up so much production off tackle. They've given up production up the C gap. And there goes Will Shipley with Mekhi Becton pulling from the right guard right up the left side there and just ripping him for a long run. So great ecosystem, special talent. You know, Barkley averages over 3 yards before contact in the second half in the regular season, 4.43 yards before contact per attempt in the third and fourth quarter. Like that's what this team has been all year. That's what they were here against Washington. And that's only a fraction of what makes them so good.
Say that number again. That's yards before contact. Over
in the regular season.
I wrote a
piece about Saquon for the site last week that still holds up. People can go check it out. Four per fantasy points data, 4.43 yards before contact in the third and fourth quarter. Like you said, you allow a guy like Barkley, who is an outrageous athlete, still at this point in his career, an outrageous athlete, 4 yards before any sort of contact. And some of those obviously are going to be inflated by big runs. Whatever, who cares? You still see the giant runways he gets that he can just rip through in the third and fourth quarter. And he's talked about this, setting up those runs early on in the games. Well, he didn't have to do any setting up in this one. He saw one big hole and took it 60 yards right away.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was obviously, it was a matchup that was much discussed going into this game, and it just could not have gone more in Philadelphia's favor. That's just an outrageous number. 4.4 yards before contact is absolutely sick. It's unfair. It almost makes you wonder if Saquon Barkley didn't underperform a little bit this season. It's just crazy. I mean, that just shouldn't happen. But that's the quality of this. That's the quality of this offensive line. And of course, running back's ability factors into that as well. Saquon's just as good as it gets. And again, that was a guy whose career was really like the, I don't know, you couldn't write the fantasy blurb on Saquon Barkley without talking about his injury history and number of games missed over the previous X number of seasons. And it's just, it's so satisfying to see him healthy this year and to arrive at this moment, just fully operational. This is such a dangerous team that can beat you any number of ways.
Yeah, such a dangerous team. And I mean, shout out to all, I mean, just shout out to the whole team in general too. I thought this was really evident throughout the course of the game, just the unselfishness of all of these players. Like how often AJ Brown was blocking to rip off these long runs, you know, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, all these guys blocking, even Saquon himself on one of the Jalen Hurts carries, he's up there slamming, you know, linebackers to open up the hole. That's just when you get a team like this, and you know, Nick Sirianni's obviously like a much maligned figure, although the fact that he is per NFL Pro just the third head coach in NFL history to make 2+ Super Bowl appearances in their first 4 seasons as an NFL head coach. You know, you can say what you want about Sirianni, but he gets these guys playing hard. It's a well-built team, it's super talented. Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie, the front office deserves a lot of credit. But these guys are unselfish. They play really hard for each other, and it's a very tight and connective team. That there was a whole week-long media cycle about AJ Brown and like, is he demanding more targets or whatever? And again, guys out there unselfishly blocking, you know, and ripping off long, like helping Saquon Barkley rip off long runs. It's a very impressive, well-built operation there in Philadelphia.
They might be coming off. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to give it more thought, but they might be coming off the greatest offseason in NFL history, right? Like Howie Roseman absolutely freaking nailed it. Because like, remember, it wasn't that long ago that they fell apart at the end of last season and had an embarrassing playoff loss, right? Like that's not bottoming out exactly, but it didn't feel good. And we replace both coordinators and it works out spectacularly on each side. We bring in Saquon Barkley. That was a pretty good ad. Zach Bond, they nail the draft, right? Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, it's just a flawless offseason. So full credit to Howie Roseman there.
It really was. Every problem that they started to show in the second half of last season, they were able to cover that up, which is such an impressive organization. Washington. It should be considered an impressive organization after the year that they just put together. Andy, I'm writing the postmortem on, you know, Buffalo and Washington. I think it's easy to take the much more optimistic tone about Washington compared to Buffalo. Obviously, I think that's much more heartbreaking if you're a Bills fan. With Washington, it's tough, right? Because I want to be sensitive to the fact that like nothing is guaranteed in the NFL, right, Andy? I mean, and you need to only look over at the other conference there and think about the fact that, oh, they'll be back. They'll get there one day. And then, you know, Allen never gets there. Burrow's never even come close to coming back to. He's never gone back to a Super Bowl after going to one in his second year. Wasn't even the damn playoffs this year. Not his fault, but still is the reality of the situation. Like nothing is guaranteed in the NFL. At the same time, if you're Washington, you got to be walking into this offseason with just full on optimism towards the future here with everything going on.
You truly do, because you've solved the biggest position. You've solved the most difficult thing to solve in the NFL. You have an absolute, no doubt about it, franchise quarterback. Just got to keep him healthy.
And getting rid of the owner, even harder than finding a franchise quarterback.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like just a generational problem that is also resolved. It's such a good point. So you have these two huge things that are fully resolved for the next 15 years, right? Forever. And you have like known areas in which you can obviously upgrade. The defense was not a Super Bowl quality defense. They just gave up 8 touchdowns. But you got to improve defensively. You got to improve against the run, especially if you're going to have to go up against this version of Saquon Barkley consistently. Something we've talked about throughout the season. Full credit to Deami Brown for playing very well in the postseason, and Zach Ertz played very well in the postseason. But another compliment, like a bookend receiver opposite Terry McLaurin, would just go a long way. Somebody who really stresses a defense opposite Terry McLaurin would go a long way. And you now have a quarterback that people are going to want to play with, right? You are a really attractive free agent destination, all other things being equal. So I imagine they're going to be able to solve the receiver problem either through the draft or through free agency. I think the run game probably needs an upgrade. Brian Robinson's a great story and all that, but he wasn't It wasn't great late in the year. I didn't think he was great in the playoffs. I thought you got about everything you could out of Austin Eckler. I think Eckler's looked good, and in a complimentary role, he can be just fine. I'd love to see that team upgrade at running back. And it's, you know, it's easy to look ahead after a rookie season like this with Daniels and say, oh, the next 10 years, the NFC is going to be run by Washington. But as you say, it's just never like that in the NFL. And your window is basically now. When you get this far, you might as well keep going. So this is a missed opportunity. You can feel really good about it, but you know, you still have Philadelphia to deal with for the next however many years. You still have, you know, we have to see how Detroit's going to bounce back from losing both coordinators, but they're a fantastically talented team. The Vikings are fantastically talented. Like, there's some other teams out there in the NFL that are in the NFC that are going to be trouble. So I wouldn't just assume that you're going to rule the next, you know, 5 or 10 years, but man, you've solved the most difficult thing to solve.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing, is that Daniels is the reason for the optimism, because everything that we've seen basically since he set foot on the NFL field, and it's really been hammered home this postseason, is that he is one of the inner circle guys. Like, he's yeah, about to enter that group of quarterbacks, you know, and I think there's no reason you shouldn't feel that way if you're a Washington fan. But, you know, it's still a missed opportunity, like you said. That's a perfect way of saying it. I mean, and I thought Zach Ertz, who it really embodies a lot of what this team got right this year, like almost all of their veteran rental types, quote unquote, became critical core contributors to this team. Yeah. And they've got to figure out what they're going to do with those guys. But it was really almost heartbreaking to see Ertz like emotional after the game, and in the postgame locker room, I thought this was really like a hitting point for me. Is he said, I wish I was 22. I wish I had my whole career ahead of me with Jaden yeah. Daniels. And that is what's crushing about some of these guys that were part of phase one won't be there for, you know, hopefully phase 2 to 3 when you're really going to Super Bowls and you're winning Super Bowls and all that stuff. But it is also encouraging that you and I have said this throughout the course of the year, this is probably the worst the supporting cast is going to look.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, right? Yeah. Around Jaden Daniels. So, yeah, if you're Washington, if you're anybody that wants to invest in this offense from like a fantasy perspective, like, I want to know who wide receiver 2 and 3 are. Because Deami Brown's a free agent. I don't know if he's earned himself like a multi-year deal with Washington or whatever, but he's probably a guy that should be a 3. You know, Zach Ertz, I think he played great for this team this year, but he probably shouldn't be catching 11 passes in the playoffs. When we have Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin, we probably should be able to hit more than one completion over 15 plus air yards. And I think with the right tweaks in the offseason, they can get there. They can add those pieces. They can make an offensive line that really played over its skis from a talent level this year. They can get that much better in the offseason to the point that, okay, yeah, we have, maybe they do have Brian Robinson as the starting running back next year, but it will be that much easier for them to continue to have a cohesive run game through the bigger moments of the season. So, yeah, everything is on the table for Washington this year. We just got to find out how they're going to fill those spots.
Yeah, it was a great game for Ertz, but man, if Zach Ertz is catching 11 passes and so much of that work is late in the game, it's just a very clear sign that Philadelphia is taking away anything downfield or any big play opportunities, right? And they're just like, okay, let's not allow you to score on this play. And if you want to keep you want to keep getting small chunks with Zach Ertz, that's just fine. I haven't seen that film of Zach Ertz post game, but that's just it speaks to just how great Jaden Daniels is and the environment that now exists in Washington, that a player like that would be so full of regret that he's not 10 years younger and can't just enjoy his entire career with this kid. You just can't say enough good things about Jaden Daniels. He was wonderful. I thought you saw several examples in this game, and the McLaurin touchdown, a perfect example of like higher level NFL quality accuracy by a pat. Like, Jaden Daniels on some of these short and intermediate crossers, like, you just can't place the ball any better than he does, right? Like, it's beyond even hitting a receiver in stride. It's hitting a receiver in stride, and they probably don't even feel that they're catching the ball. Just perfect ball placement. And you know, quarterback accuracy really shows up in yards after catch. And I thought this game was a great example of it. I mean, the offense moved the ball. Again, Daniels was great. You just keeping pace with Philadelphia in this game was just going to be impossible.
Yeah, that point about the accuracy is really well said. And it's the reason that, I mean, my God, like, how high is too high to be drafting Jaden Daniels in 2025? And shoot, forget about 2025. I'll be wanting to do it in 26 and 27 and 28 because Andy, I was talking about this with Nate last night. I think that Daniels does fit into the Jalen Hurts archetype of quarterback, the Russell Wilson archetype of quarterback, that these guys that when they get pressured, they like to scramble because they should. They're really good athletes. They're also, they're guys that primarily their best plays come on these outside the numbers, deep passes, things like that. They aren't as much like the, you know, over the middle type kind of, you love to see that in the NFL. However, I think Daniels, if he's not already there, certainly has the potential to be the best of that archetype. Wilson's a great player in his prime. Yeah. Like he's a very accomplished player. And like if Jaden Daniels has Russell Wilson's career, you're feeling great about that. But he's so much more accurate than I think all of those guys in that archetype. And he has the potential to be the peak version of the archetype, which again, if he becomes that, he is going to be just a fantasy sledgehammer every single season.
Yeah, they might be, you know, they might be one exciting offseason ad away from Jaden Daniels actually entering next year as not the consensus QB1, but you're going to be able to make an argument that he's in the Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson tier.
100%. Final thing before we get off this game and throw it a break. Andy, I always say this, you know, you're significantly older than me. You've seen a lot more football than me. Have you ever seen an NFL team publicly scolded like a misbehaving toddler in the grocery store aisle the way we saw Washington publicly scolded by Hockley, the official in that, Sean Hockley, the official in that game, after Frankie Louvu, I mean, just going full lunatic mode, leaping over the offensive line to try to stop the tush push, which, hey, all credit to Frankie Louvu for trying something. Yeah. Gotta be doing something to stop the damn Eagles tush push. So have you, and then obviously he comes out and says, if this behavior continues, we will award a score to, they have been warned that if this behavior continues, we will award a score to the opponent. Have you ever seen anything like that in your life?
I gotta be honest. I generally consider myself to be past my learning years. I whole days go by, whole weeks, months. I don't learn anything. I'm old.
Totally.
But I don't think I knew that an official could even get that close to simply awarding a touchdown. It was a wonderful moment. It actually, like, that whole sequence chewed up like a minute or a minute plus that Washington probably didn't have to spare. But man, was it five penalties for 0 yards? Is that what they had? I've never seen that. But also, it's probably the right thing to do, right? You got to just try to guess the snap count, and you're only talking about giving up a matter of inches on each penalty. So they were like stuck in a weird time loop there. No, I've never heard those words come out of an official's mouth at any level. It's probably the most, if you're just an impartial observer, it was the most entertaining sequence of that game.
Yeah, I had two thoughts that were like doomsday thoughts during that, which my first one was, oh my God, could you imagine if this happened during a regular season game and like the fantasy questions that we would get about who gets the touchdown?
Oh, shoot,
and
yeah,
I mean, just,
yeah.
People would be lined up at Yahoo headquarters with torches and pitchforks, you know, ready to take that place down if they thought they were cheated out of the touchdown. Whatever, there would be the whining would be absurd. I think the only thing that would maybe beat that level of whining would be if it happened during a Chiefs playoff game.
Hell
that,
yeah.
Like, they just awarded it. Because Andy, I don't know if you've ever seen this stuff. I don't buy into any of the ref conspiracy nonsense. Like I said at the top of the show, it's bullshit. The NFL is not rigged. If the NFL was rigged, they'd be rigging it for the damn Cowboys. They'd be rigging it for the damn Cowboys and the Jets every single year. They certainly wouldn't be like, yeah, let's get Chiefs and Eagles back in there. Like, nobody wants to watch this game. Let's do that again. They wouldn't do that. So the NFL is not rigged, whatever. But there are some minorly funny, you know, edits where people will do like fake broadcasts of, you know, you can't touch Patrick Mahomes, like fake Collinsworth voices on, you know, in social media reels and things like that. that ref announcement sounded like one of those things where like people will make the jokes like 15-yard penalty for touching Patrick Mahomes. This player will be thrown out of the game and executed publicly afterwards. Like that is what that announcement sounded like. So I could only imagine what the internet would look like if that happened during a Chiefs game.
I nearly fired off a joke in that moment on Twitter or on X about you know the NFL league office realizing that they could simply award touchdowns to the Chiefs, and then I held back because I was like, no, I can't. Even though I think this is moderately funny, I can't. I'm not going to contribute to that.
Yeah, good on you. I mean, hey, you do have the check, Andy. You are verified. You could have gotten that sweet engagement money like some of our.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to call them colleagues or peers on some people, allegedly real humans on social media trying to benefit off that sweet Chiefs referee engagement money. But yeah, again, shout out to Washington. Great season. I'm excited to watch them next year and to talk about them a ton during the offseason. But we are going to take our final break. We come back. Great segue there. We're going to do a little bit of Super Bowl therapy. For people who are not excited about this particular matchup right after this. All right, we're back. Like I said, this segment is pretty loose in concept, but I thought it would be fun here for our final segment to maybe just exercise some demons, do a little therapy on the fact that this is Chiefs-Eagles, the matchup that I think, you know, we, again, both, me, I will take the heat for it because I am not a born again person here in the Ben Johnson cult. I am the same old jackass that I was last year. Andy, he's a new man. He gets off scot free with this one. But most of America, I think, again, this was not the matchup that they wanted to see. I think most people don't like the Chiefs anymore. I'm not one of those people. I still enjoy watching the Chiefs and I enjoy Patrick Mahomes and the whole thing. But for everybody else, Andy, like, let's do a little therapy here. Let's exercise some demons. What's something you just want to exercise here about this particular game?
First of all, I love the idea that I cannot be held accountable for any opinion that I may have had prior to the Ben Johnson era in Chicago. I'm probably gonna milk that for a while. I really appreciate that. That's a great contribution by you. We've seen this Super Bowl before. Jalen Hurts, by the way, actually played one of the greatest games in a losing effort in the history of the Super Bowl. That one. So like, there's a lot to look forward to. That was just an objectively great game, and the Chiefs are a wonderful team, and the Eagles are a wonderful team. So again, very excited for the Super Bowl. I guess we're going to find out if there is even one more thing that the public can possibly learn about the Kelce family, because it's just
going not helping. I don't think you're helping this particular exercise by saying that.
Like, we got 2 weeks ahead of just a whole lot of Kelce's. I'm not totally looking forward to that. What else? Hopefully we can actually, like we talked about the, you know, the conspiracy theory nonsense in the last segment. Do we put that to rest now that the Chiefs are actually in the Super Bowl? Was the whole point of that just to get them to the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay.
No, no,
okay. So we're pretty sure that the NFL itself is locked in on getting them three straight.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Listen, they only got the last one against the Eagles because of that. Juju Smith-Schuster, definitely not a real holding call on James Bradbury. So yeah, I mean, the league office for sure will still be in the bag for Kansas City. Don't you worry about that. I mean, you haven't said the Taylor Swift thing yet, but I mean, yes, obviously the league needs Taylor Swift in the games. Otherwise the ratings are notably terrible.
Who even talked about the NFL before Taylor Swift? I don't even remember it.
I don't know about you, Andy, but I mean, there is definitely, just from a contractual standpoint, like, I mean, I was making probably like $20 an hour before Taylor Swift, you know, injected so much liquid capital into the NFL, that even I am now able to make a living wage on this. So, I mean, shoot, like, again,
now a billion-dollar multinational company in the era of Taylor Swift. Who'd even heard of it before her?
I'm almost near Barron's wealth. I mean, shoot, I might be near jet worthy. Me, you, and T Swift might all be taken off together on our private jets. So, yeah, again, shout out to Taylor Swift for making the NFL. That's why they rigged the games for Kansas City, obviously. But no, seriously, I think that this game is going to be really fun to talk about, like, kind of the schematic advantages here on both sides, because I think with Kansas City, you know, the only time that I was worried about Kansas City and again, it didn't really end up mattering. They win the game, whatever. But there was the point where, you know, Caliendo, the Chiefs offensive lineman, who I think Jim Nance joked, like, oh, was that Frank Caliendo out there? Which I thought was moderately funny by Jim Nance. Pretty decent work by Jim. You know, he blew up one play. Harrison Phillips blew up one play, just took Caliendo back into Pat Mahomes. And like, yeah, that almost never, like, those sort of negative plays just almost never happen to Kansas City. Like, Jalen Carter, can he dominate a game in a big moment here with an interior that, you know, certainly is good, but has had to put different players out there because they're playing Joe Tooney at left tackle. So, like, that's something really interesting to watch. Like, again, Carter, I think, is right on the precipice of becoming one of the best defensive players in the game, period. Yep. Like, can he win the Eagles a game in the Super Bowl against Kansas City? That's the type, like, these are the type of players I'm really, yeah, I'm not interested in the next biopic of the Kelseys, although shout out, your boy was in the Kelsey documentary on Amazon. I don't know if you know this, but I was actually, my voice is in the Kelsey documentary.
Oh, shut up, really?
Yeah, and again, that's why I'm now a near billionaire because of that. Taylor Swift got the numbers on that up so high that your boy is able to now retire. Actually, on a serious note, zero money from Bezos and the boys over there for using my voice and likeness in the Kelsey documentary. I certainly need better lawyers and representation. But yeah, no, I'm not interested in the Kelsey stuff, but like, seeing more players like Jalen Carter, Cooper DeJean, these guys for the Eagles, I am interested in that.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that Jalen Hurts played a phenomenal game in the last Super Bowl against the Chiefs, and I don't know that the Chiefs can weather another one of those. So there is something to, and you mentioned earlier in this podcast, like, just how, you know, you take away the primary read for Jalen Hurts, and sometimes he will make some weird decisions against a pass rush, right? And take some unnecessary losses. And it does feel like that could be one of the, you know, if the Chiefs can force some of those situations where what might be a normal throwaway for a lot of quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts kind of spins around and tries to do something, you know, completely out of structure and actually gets taken down for like a 9-yard, 12-yard. Like, it's, you can imagine a scenario where that is a decisive play, but my God, he put up numbers the last time they faced the Chiefs in a Super Bowl, and he was certainly not the reason that they lost it. So, I mean, we know that, like, in this game, one of these sides is going to be pretty close to perfect, and that is going to be the team that wins. But, I mean, Philly showed that can be them in the last Super Bowl, and I think they are certainly right now a much better team, and they're coming off a couple of, like, near flawless off seasons. So, really anxious to see this game. I guess if there's one other thing, I mean, nobody's going to be talking about this, and people hate it when I talk about kickers, but Jake Elliott has not had a great year. And it's been a little sketchy for him in the postseason. I would hate to see one of my least favorite things is when, like, a legitimately great game comes down to, like, you know, a missed kick, some sort of special teams gaffe. I hope that's not the case in this one. We know, like, Harrison Butker, whatever you think of Harrison Butker, and there's a lot that you may think about him, he is a totally proven big game postseason commodity. Elliott's really had a rough one. Like, I think his success rate on the year was like 70-something%, which is just not what we expect from kickers in this era.
Not at all. So that's a great point. That's what people are tuning in for. No more Kelsey T Swift talk. Let's get to the kicker battle here. So people will definitely be dialing into this podcast for that, no doubt about it. But yeah, no, I mean, that's a big thing to think about in this game too, the special teams part of it. But yeah, man, I'm excited to watch the Super Bowl. I'm excited to see, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, what does he throw at Jalen Hurts? Can Kellen Moore, you know, be a slight upgrade on the offense overall? Can he give him some answers against the blitz? And if the Chiefs play a ton of man coverage, which we don't fully have the numbers here, from this conference championship round in terms of how much man coverage they played and things like that. I'm sure that data will be available throughout the course of the day. It's still pretty early here on Monday morning. It felt like a lot of man coverage against Buffalo, which why wouldn't you throw that man coverage against Buffalo with those receivers on the outside? They do that against Philadelphia. We already know they have a guy in AJ Brown who can absolutely, you know, dunk on you. And look, like, if the Chiefs win a Super Bowl, it's historic. It's great. It is pretty cool. It's cool to see that. It's cool to see that level of dominance, in my opinion. Would I love more chances for more players at the Super Bowl? 100%. But look, the final thing that I'll just say, that if you want to think like, okay, it's good if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, think about a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, man. I mean, who is just, again, one of the best receivers of this era. He's not doing the full Melvin Gordon where, I mean, Melvin Gordon after that, the one Super Bowl literally said like, I got carried. You know, if he can win a Super Bowl out of this Chiefs thing, I mean, I think it's all been worth it.
Yeah. I also just want to say before we wrap, I love conference championship weekend, and there's probably no better live experience inside a stadium when you love a team than like being in the building. My wife and I were at, like, you know, Bears haven't gone to a Super Bowl in forever, but 2006 they beat the Saints. It's a, you know, beautiful snowfall, it's a lovely night, and like that feeling that my team has just won this game and we're going to the Super Bowl is just, it's just unlike any other live spectator experience in sport. And it was wonderful to see it for a couple of fan bases. And it is a big part of why conference title weekend is just it's just a great day. It's just a great watch.
Well, it's really nice for all those Chiefs fans in Arrowhead who've just
finally something goes their way.
Finally, yeah. Something goes their way, and they're able to feel that way. And same thing with the Eagles. So, yeah.
How hilarious, by the way, is the idea of like Chiefs players walking around in conference championship merch after, like, who is, what Chiefs fan is buying like a, hey, we're the AFC, we're the AFC conference champs, you know, t-shirt, hat, like, that's wild to me.
Yet another example that this thing is not rigged, because you don't think the NFL wouldn't like to suck out every last cent of whoever insert are the Bills are AFC champions in 2024 season. Like, they want to sell those things like hotcakes. You're right. If you're a Chiefs fan and you're buying that, I don't know, man. why are you buying the conference championship gear? That, and for the players, yeah, that's got to be the first thing going in the Goodwill pile, right?
Right.
I mean, they Andy and the boys probably have like just a bin in the locker room. Like, yeah, put them on for the pictures after the game. You can just go ahead and chuck them in that bin right there. We'll be donating those things afterwards. Don't worry about it. You don't even got to pack it in your bag. Go ahead and toss it in there. No big deal. Yeah. If the league wanted, and the league wants to suck every dollar that it possibly can out of these games, they would want somebody else to get those t-shirts. If you're a Chiefs fan, you're buying those. I mean, again, what are you doing?
Yeah. How many division titles have they won in a row? It's a crazy number, right? Like, are there really Chiefs fans out there that are just wearing like the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs AFC West division champ shirt? Like, that stuff is wild to me.
Well, there probably is, because we actually don't owe it to Taylor Swift that the NFL is what it is, and that you and I are private. Well, you are private jetting around the world. A finger crossed. I'm going to get there someday. We'll see. But it's the rabid sicko fans. And I always say, I mean, again, my website, literally the highest tier subscription is sickos. I was lovingly calling all the people in my Discord that keep requesting these tight end charts. They're sick in the head. So I say this lovingly. It's the sickos like that, whoever is out there, the Kansas City Chiefs fan that's buying the AFC title, the division, like buying all those shirts. That's the only thing they wear. They don't buy clothes from anywhere else. Those are the people keeping the lights on. So shout out to you fans out there. So look, Chiefs fans, Eagles fans, your teams are going to the Super Bowl. For everybody else, exercise your demons. Get the jokes out now. Suck it up, because we got 2 weeks to talk about this game, and we got a big game heading in to talk about for the Super Bowl, Andy. And I'm very excited, and I appreciate you joining me for the conference championship breakdown. I agree. Fantastic weekend every single time. So shout out to you, Andy, in this new era of your life.
I'm only like a week in. I feel like a kid again. Life is good. Yeah.
Life is good. Life is good for all of us here following football. And that is going to do it for us on today's show. Thursday, We will be back. Dalton Del Don will be back to help identify the biggest lessons we can learn from this postseason and take into next year's fantasy season. Until then, we are out.